When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Tuesday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Plenty to get to here in this second hour. We'll continue our WNBA draft reactions with senior writer for Winsider, that being Miles Ehrlich. He'll give us his thoughts on the 2025 draft class. What are the expectations for Paige Bueckers now in the W? A lot to preview around the association. NBA postseason action begins tonight. Play-in tournament games are 7-8 matchups, both out in the Eastern and Western Conference. In Orlando, it's the Magic and the Hawks. In San Francisco, it's the Warriors and the Grizzlies. We'll also take an early look at our opening round playoff matchups around the association that we do have set in DRS, just 9 days away from the 2025 NFL Draft in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Some final moves made by teams around the National Football League and the 17 prospects that will officially be outside of Lambeau in attendance for the 2025 NFL Draft in the opening round, and maybe more, starting next Thursday.
Yeah, we got a red hot topic to talk about in just a few moments here, but it is nice here to get hour number two started with so many good topics that certainly are on deck. Major League Baseball, the WNBA draft. And the thing I'm most excited about, Ben, is we no longer have to look at the NBA games tonight, Ben, and explain this to the people. Estimated starting lineup tonight, because we have no idea who's going to play. I love the fact we have an idea who every single person is going to play tonight and play hard and play major minutes and get ready to go. The meaningful NBA finally starts tonight, and that's a good thing.
Donnie Wrightside has been waiting for this moment for a while. The regular season now in the books in the association. Beautiful. And his postseason hoops from here on out. Soon to be the official playoffs starting on Saturday. All right, DRS, just over a week away from the 2025 NFL draft. Those last minute preparations in a lengthy draft cycle around the NFL. And some big news last night from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Colorado quarterback Shedeur Sanders will hold one last private workout on Thursday, 1 week out from the draft in Boulder, for a contingent of officials from the New York Giants. Some final intrigue leading into next Thursday's NFL draft in Green Bay. What do you make of it, DRS, in a season defined by its smokescreens and its speculation?
I promise you, New York Giants fans, I come at this with love from an NFC East foe in the Philadelphia Eagles. Life is much better when the New York Giants are better and the Eagles can play them and we can enjoy our Sunday afternoons. So if you would make me somehow the owner of the New York Giants, I promise you today, I will fire every single person in that building that's making decisions from what we're about to look at with that tweet here. Understand this. Shedeur Sanders is not a player that's like, hey, man, we didn't get enough tape on that guy. Haven't seen him play in any big games. Boy, does he play Division I, II, or III football? We don't know. He said, well, Donnie, why would you be talking about this? Understand this. If you do not have your mind made up on Shedeur Sanders, whether he can be a franchise quarterback or not at this point, and it takes you again to ask for a private workout where he's going to be in shorts and a t-shirt throwing 5-yard out routes and 7-yard slant passes, where my organization is going to make the determination that he is going to be our starting quarterback, fire everybody in that building. Please, I can't take it anymore. The Giants are so inept, it makes my head hurt. You're actually going to bring your entire organization to a private workout to decide if you want to draft a guy. Make it make sense, Ben. It makes no sense. How can an organization run this way? Oh, yeah, it's the NFL, and no matter what you do, you make money. Sorry.
I'm not sure I can make it make sense. And I think what you are expressing there is the truest word of every word. And that comes from the approach of a divisional foe. You should want the New York Giants to be this stupid and this bad in their decision-making process, because it will keep them awful and at the cellar of the NFC East for a very long time. Now, we say all of that, right? Final preparation, due diligence, maybe a small, and I mean very small, benefit of the doubt to Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, and those power brokers in that Giants organization. Because, Donnie, they are not afforded the opportunity to have a disastrous season, as the odds makers expect. Worst win total in the NFL entering 2025, the New York Giants at 5.5, the most juice on the under of any of those 32 NFL teams, and the four that have a win total of 5 and a hook. So just making sure that all your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted. I do not believe this ends up with the New York Giants at 3rd overall drafting Shedeur Sanders. So we'll just say that. Abdul Carter, still the hefty odds-on favorite. The edge rusher, the game wrecker out of Penn State at minus 220. Donnie, a report of this magnitude from Adam Schefter for something like this, a private one final workout a week from the NFL draft as it pertains to a very hot-button quarterback that can move the needle one way or the other, that would drastically shift draft odds. It really didn't. Shador's price to go 3rd overall, a little bit shorter. But it's not like Abdul Carter is even money or back into plus money. He is still greater than a $2 favorite. So while you are correct, and everybody in the Giants front office and ownership group should have their head examined, I do not ultimately believe it results in the Giants selecting Shedeur Sanders 3rd overall a week from Thursday night in Green Bay, especially not after we already learned the offseason plan for the Giants in that quarterback room and the big acquisitions of Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston.
Like, think about this, too. Like, Shedeur Sanders, you show up with the contingent, like, oh, we might want to draft him. Like, if he throws a 15-yard out and it's incomplete, do they leave the building? I'm like, yep, told you he couldn't make that throw. Or if he makes that throw, it's like, yep, that sealed the deal. Like, you see how, like, Ben's laughing, and so am I. Like, it doesn't make sense what you're doing. And it'd be like, you know what? Let's Abdul Carter, we're going to not put a offensive line in front of you. Let me just see you rush the quarterback. Oof, man. Did you see him just rush the quarterback on air and nobody blocked him? How fantastic. Or Travis Hunter, I'm going to line you up at the goal line. You run to the 40. And if you run a good 40, we're going to draft you. Instead of popping on the tape and see how electric his football speed is with full pads on against competition. That's the ineptness of the organization. Having said that, though, the Giants ruined their season. They shouldn't have beat the Indianapolis Colts. But the way this draft is breaking out, if let's just say they don't move off of 3 and don't take Shedeur Sanders, there's a really good football player waiting right for them if they want to take him. That's Abdul Carter and or Travis Hunter. But when I just see how they've operated as a team for, like, you know, the past 5 years, you trust them to make the wrong decision as opposed to make the right decision. And everything we read and get these tweets and emails, like, to say, like, you know what? Look at this. They're going back to see Shedeur, and it just makes my head hurt. Like, you know they're going to make the wrong decision at 3 when it should be one of the easiest decisions where you take the best player on the board available and you move forward.
Which I think, Donnie, is the cause of this hesitation or trepidation, perhaps, if you believe in the New York Giants or have a lack of belief in the G-men, perhaps. Yeah. Because it did seem rather crystal clear at the end of the college football and NFL season that in a quarterback draft class that probably had two first rounders, at least two top five, top 10 potential quarterbacks, that for the two quarterback desperate teams, the Titans and the Browns drafting one and two, it would be QB, Cam Orchard or Sanders in some form or fashion, which the Giants kind of squander that opportunity, beating the Colts week number 17. And yet the Browns are not drafting a quarterback by zero indication. Does it open up the door for the Giants? Oh, wait, they're not in love, at least early in the process, with Shador Sanders. So they signed Jameis and Russ for only maybe in the final week to go back to Shador. And this could be the thing that makes their final decision. That's why I think there is fear. I do not ultimately believe that will be the decision. More around the NFL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Just over a week away from the 2025 NFL Draft, in the early offseason programs for NFL clubs, if you have a first-year head coach in your organization, they have begun. Of course, DRS, always drama in Big D for the Dallas Cowboys when it comes to contract extensions and what Jerry Jones needs to spend in an offseason to make the Cowboys a true, if it's even possible, Super Bowl contender. The big one this year. Last offseason, it was Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Waited till the 11th hour and then some. This offseason, it is Micah Parsons. Per a source, this is Clarence Hill Jr., who has covered the Cowboys since the late 90s. Micah Parsons is at Cowboys voluntary workouts this week under first-year head coach Brian Schottenheimer. So perhaps the drama in Big D waits for at least a few more weeks, as Micah Parsons said that he would show up for voluntary workouts and is in fact there.
Good. I like this. Now, understand this. Micah Parsons and Jerry Jones know he is going to get paid and get paid a lot of money before the season. Yeah. And the things that I always point out is, like, you know, sometimes, Ben, we have leverage or where you don't. Like, if Micah Parsons played for the Bengals, he'd probably never show up because they wouldn't even engage in conversation for a new contract at that point, based on what we're seeing for Trey Hendrickson. But he understands they're probably close. Get your workouts in. These guys love to be around their teammates and in the locker room and working out here. He doesn't want to be in Arizona or in Northern California training away from the team saying, I'll show the Dallas Cowboys what I'm actually worth by not showing up. So I like this, because how many times do we see you're away from the team, you're a distraction, you come back to the team, you pull a hamstring injury because you're not doing your normal routine, which you do every single year. We understand what's at stake here. A lot of money. He will be paid a lot of money. I love the fact that he showed up in OTAs where he didn't have to show up there. He's like, you know what? I'm a team guy, Jerry. Let's close this deal sooner than later. Get me paid. Let's get on the field and try to win a playoff game here.
So here's the thing, right, with Micah Parsons, and it's one of the reasons Donnie and I always bemoan when front offices are stupid and do not have the financial foresight. Micah is entering the final year of his rookie deal. He has completed 4 years of service in the National Football League. After your third year of service, you can start to engage in contract negotiations. In the last year, Jerry Jones has now seen, although I guess he doesn't really care about resetting the market, but Jerry Jones has now seen Max Crosby become the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the NFL. Miles Garrett become the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the NFL at $40 million per year. If Jerry Jones would have had the financial foresight and decided to pay Micah Parsons last offseason, he probably could have made Micah Parsons the highest paid defensive player in the history of the National Football League, highest paid non-QB ever, to the tune of about $34 or $35 million, if he is going to even match the Miles Garrett deal. That is $5 million per year more on average. Oh, the salary cap is up. Yes, but these are the things that harm your organization, and you don't have a ton of money to spend elsewhere, like when you desperately need a running back to have any sort of offense. DRS, I don't know if I'm proud to admit this to you or anybody on national television or national radio.
Sorry to see you go.
My first win total bet for 2025 in the National Football League. The Dallas Cowboys over 7.5.
Okay.
I've said this quite often.
Yeah.
I've said this quite often. I wouldn't spend Donnie's money. I wouldn't spend my worst enemy's money on that NFC title price for Dallas. Not this year, not last year, not the previous 5 years, not the next 5 years to come. I certainly would never even look at that Super Bowl number. And as much as we give Dallas, and correctly so, all of their you-know-what for their postseason failures, they have often been a regular season success. And when Dak Prescott is healthy, even if he's playing 12 or 13 games, you're telling me the Cowboys can't win 8? I did bet the Dallas Cowboys over 7.5 for a win total that is just so drastically different than we normally see on Dallas this time of the year.
Yes, I love it. Like, you have to understand this. There's money to be made and there's fandom to be made, right, at the same time. Like yesterday, my Philadelphia Phillies, I didn't think they'd win that game. Bet against them. Hey, look at that. Came away with a profit. Same thing. Like, Donnie hates the New York Giants. No, I don't. I hate incompetence. Did you know your boy, Donnie Wrightside, actually bet the Giants team total over when somebody across the street hung a terrible line on that? Yes, because we can make money. And I love it. The Dallas Cowboys, when Dak Prescott is healthy for the regular season, are a very competent football team, specifically, on offense. So I see the 7.5. Now, granted, the NFC East does have a very tough schedule on paper heading into next year. But 17 games, and they need to win 8 of those? And you can't say, you know, oh, well, Dak's going to get hurt, and CeeDee Lamb's going to miss games, and Micah Parsons won't be there by the time Week 14 happens. Sure, you can do that. But if the Dallas Cowboys are healthy, they are winning 8 football games or more next year. You can book that.
9-year NFL career now for Dak Prescott. Unlike last year and 2020 and a little bit of 2022, Prescott has played a full season in 6 of those 9. Even back in 2022's NFL campaign, DRS, when he missed a couple of games to start the Cooper Rush extravaganza, he still came back to play 12. He won 8 of those. Dallas won 12 that season. So basically, any time that Dak Prescott, 7 of the 9 years of his NFL career, has played double-digit games, at least 12. Dallas has won at least 8 games. That's all I'm hoping for this year. I don't even know if that means the Cowboys are a playoff team or can contend for a divisional prize. And again, I wouldn't bet my worst enemy's money on any of those postseason numbers to contend for the NFC Championship or, of course, to hoist a Lombardi Trophy. But, Donnie, those numbers are so drastically different than we ever see on the Cowboys because they always have that Yankees tax that we talk about. The public love behind those expectations each and every offseason. This year doesn't look anything like the previous few seasons.
No, it doesn't. And also, if Dak comes back and is healthy, that's the point. Like Dak is as much as you like to hate on him, and maybe he can't win the big game, he's still a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. That's a bona fide fact. Look at the statistics here. Also understand this. We laughed at Dallas last year coming into the season without a running back. There's a lot of running back talent in this draft, including the top of the list there, the Ashton Jinty, which could make that team immediately better, particularly on offense. Dallas win 8 games or more. You can book that. Book it right now.
Let's preview some playoff series around the association next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This Tuesday, on this Tuesday, the NBA postseason officially begins. Play-in tournament games. On Saturday, though, the actual NBA playoffs get underway. DRS, a quadruple header on Saturday with the 4 playoff series, 2 on each side, Eastern, Western conferences that we have set right now. Our 3-6 splits, our 4-5 matchups as well. Let's start in the Western Conference. Our 3-6. The Los Angeles Lakers, who will have home floor advantage in the best of 7 set against the Minnesota Timberwolves, the 6th seed around the Western Conference. Luka Doncic, LeBron James in the Los Angeles Lakers. That should be a recipe for playoff success. The Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that reached the Western Conference Finals a season ago and was booked as the series outright favorite before Luka Doncic had other ideas playing for the Dallas Mavericks. This time around, it's LA, booked now nearly as a $2 favorite to win this series outright. We expect it to go the distance to get to 7 games. Minnesota is getting a game and a half as the series underdog in that series spread. Your initial thought, DRS, on this series between the Lakers and the T-Wolves is what?
Two things. I do think the Lakers are the better basketball team, and they're a veteran team here, Luka Doncic and LeBron James, which means you're going to get extra rest time, which is always a big factor for me, and I love that. Also, understand this. Home court advantage makes a big difference no matter where you play. Yeah. So you're going to take a look at the Lakers being home. They make sense. So I just told you, the Lakers, I think, win the series. I think I like the matchup here between the two teams, and it's home court. But you know what I don't like? Laying a minus 196 price on the Lakers to actually win this series. So it's sort of like, yeah, we like them. Like a high, like let's just say you have a football game, right? 13.5-point spread. Yeah, I like the team to win the game. I don't know if they can cover the 13.5. That's the feeling that I have, because if the expectations are we have a longer series and I get close to a 2-to-1 price there that I have to lay, I'm like, you know what? I don't know about that, because I don't think the Lakers win this series, Ben, in 5 games, which means 6-plus. Right. I don't know if I want to lay the minus 196, even if I do think the Lakers do win this series. LeBron rested, Luka rested, very good home court advantage, all adds up. I just don't like the price that I'm going to have to lay for the Lakers to win the series at close to a 2-to-1.
I think you could look at then the series spread. If your prediction is Lakers in 6, it's -1.5 at +112. That also does give you some wiggle room. The Lakers could be even more dominant and impressive than perhaps we expect. There are so many different ways to bet these playoff series. I love this time of year because game by game, night by night, we see drastic swings based on one result. I expect the Lakers to win this series. I think it's Lakers in 6, despite it going to 7 games is the shortest price at +210 for it to be ended in 5 or 6. Not all that much different, just 10 cents at +220. The DRS, the Timberwolves rolling. They won 8 of their last 9 to earn the 6th seed. They were 32-29 at the end of February. In March and halfway through April, 17-4. But again, this is why you get Luka Doncic for these moments. And if you're going to pair LeBron and Luka, I have a hard time thinking that team is going to lose, at least in the opening round of the postseason. The correct score prices, by the way, the most likely outcome is the Lakers to end this early, as the odds makers see it, at +360. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. NBA is 2-3-2, 2-2-1-1-1.
I think it's 2-2. Yeah, the finals used to be the 2-3-2, but I don't think they do that. Still do that in the NBA finals? I'm not even sure at this point. Yeah, so
2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah,
and thus that home floor advantage kind of baked into those prices. DRS for LA to win it in LA +360 and 5 for LA to win it in LA but go the distance +390 and 7.
And that's the way you should look at it optimistically. Like, well, I don't know if it's going to be a long series, but 4-to-1 sounds quick. But if the Lakers do have that lead and the game 5's at home, they'll look to close that one out. A little bit harder, as we know, to close it out on the road, let's just say, per se, in game number 6. And then 7 at home, the +390 price. So those price points do make sense. There is some fun bets, too, on the FanDuel Sportsbook, like series total made 3's there. Anthony Edwards at a +110 price. But how about like a Dante DiVincenzo with a 14-to-1? Like, if you think it's going to be an extended series and maybe a higher scoring series, you just want the guy that's shooting unlimited 3-point shots here, and that's what his game is. Because Dante DiVincenzo with the Knicks, when it was like, hey, he's one of our only outlets here, he shot a ton of 3-point shots in the playoffs. Maybe something sneaky like that to have fun with.
Luka Doncic is the favorite to score the most points in this series at +125. Anthony Edwards, second best number. The T-Wolves needed to win their final 3 games to avoid the play-in tournament, be the 6th seed. Anthony Edwards scored 43-plus in 2 of those 3. Our next Western Conference series a little bit later on. WNBA draft reactions from last night with Miles Erlich up next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The future of the W changed last night for the 2025 WNBA draft, and Miles Ehrlich joins the show live right here on this Tuesday morning on the Early Line. Senior writer for Windsider, he was at the draft last night at the Shed in New York City watching the future of the WNBA take shape live and in person. So, Miles, we appreciate the time on this Tuesday morning for your draft reactions here on Sports Grid.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Good to talk to you.
Miles, as expected and confirmed last night, the coronation of Paige Bueckers going first overall to the Dallas Wings. A minus 20,000 favorite to go one of one. She accomplishes exactly that just over a week after capping her outstanding collegiate career with a national championship. We'll get to the rest of the draft in just a moment, but let's start with Paige Bueckers. Everybody expected her to be the first overall pick way back in 2021. After a long college career and a national championship to end it, she goes first overall to Dallas. She will have very high expectations entering her rookie campaign in this summer, Miles. What do you think is a successful debut year in the W for Paige Bueckers in Dallas?
So I think a successful year for her is just continuing to be her. It's not just that she's going to go out there and score 30, 40 in a game, although we saw her do that in the tournament. She had three games of 30 plus, set her career high with 40 in a tourney game, but it's her efficiency. She was coming off of 52, 43, 89 splits at 20 points a game with UConn this year, and her 3.5 assist to turnover ratio led the nation. So I think that for a rookie to come in and just be that composed, have such a good feel for the game, and be alongside pros like Arike Ogunbowale, and now Dejanae Carrington is over there, Nalissa Smith's over there now, Tierra McCowan. They already have a pretty strong starting five that she'll be able to slot into. They were just needing this point guard. So I think she's got a lot of vets to lean on, and she's just going to stay at that efficiency level, and that'll help her make that transition.
I love the fact that we talk about the WNBA now. It used to be like, okay, we're trying to learn the players. But the past couple of years here, true superstars, it looks like, are coming into the WNBA, which is great for the sport. Boots on the ground, as we like to say, Miles, you were in the building last night. Talk to us about, like, maybe the added energy of the past couple of years in the WNBA and what it looks like for the future, that now we're getting those college superstars that everybody knows into the WNBA. It can only help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that part of this, the credit goes to the league in terms of kind of bridging that connection from college to the pros in a way that I don't think they always did. I think they always kind of looked at the W as, this is the pinnacle, you should want to get to us. But now we're seeing that storytelling go on because you've got these players in market for 4 years. And I think that's why college fans resonate so much with those players, is you have more time than you might on the men's side. So by the time you get to the pros, they're already household names. And the energy is just, as the league starts to expand now and really just ratchet everything up, it's just so great to see from fan bases that you don't have to be in one of the 13 markets that exist now. You can be anywhere. You could be watching in college, and then you have your loyalties when the players go pro.
So, Miles, as you alluded to, now 13 WNBA franchises. The Golden State Valkyries drafting fifth overall in their first WNBA draft last night, following Paige Bueckers, second overall to the Seattle Storm. Dominique Malanga, a 6'6 French talent, who was the first French woman to ever dunk in a Euro Cup game. Some international upside, to say the least. As you look at the entirety of the top half, perhaps, of this WNBA draft class here in 2025, what do you make of the class overall?
So this is interesting. I think that there's been a narrative kind of building because some of the biggest names, the most recognizable names, who had an option to come out this year, in Olivia Miles, AZ Fudd, Flauge Johnson, they opted to come out next year instead. So I think that the groupthink consensus was that this class might not be as strong. I think it's got a ton of depth. Obviously, the names that you mentioned with Paige and Dominique, they're the standard at the top. But more and more roster spots are going to be created over these next few years with these new expansion teams. And more collegiate players will have the chance to make it past those first couple of weeks of training camp, which was not always the case. So I think that development opportunity is really going to help showcase that the talent was never the issue. It was just the lack of space. So I'm pretty high on not just the front half there, but pretty deep back half of the first round into the second round. There were some people that in the industry I thought were projected to go much higher than they went. And that just shows how strong the game is right now.
Yeah, it's in a really good spot. And again, talking about the superstars, last year getting drafted number one overall, Caitlin Clark was fantastic. Now, also the transition from college to pro athlete, there were some questions how quickly she would acclimate to the league. She was fantastic. What are the expectations this year for Paige Bueckers going from college? Can she be that bright spotlight right away in the WNBA?
So I think that guards have historically struggled a little bit, and that's not a knock at all. But you look at Jackie Young or Kelsey Plum, even obviously Sabrina dealt with the injury too. But what Caitlin was able to do last year almost just reset it all. And that's not to say she was not without her struggles. I think we saw that she had some turnover issues early on in the season, but she really adapted and had that long leash to be able to adapt on the fly and to figure that out. And then by the end of it, it was one of the best rookie seasons we've ever seen. And I think Paige similarly will have a long leash like that, because with the CBA coming up next year, nothing's guaranteed. There are only two active players that are signed past this season because they're all waiting for the new CBA to kick in so that they get the salary boost. So I think teams are going to have even more incentive to really play these rookies and let them kind of sink or swim. And they need to know what they have. So I think Paige, kind of on the same track as Caitlin last year, is going to have a really, really big opportunity to play through some of those mistakes. And I think she's built for it. I really think that the most impressive thing I have to say that I saw from her last night wasn't even about being on the court, but it was about how interested she is in year one being a player rep for the Dallas Wings. She wants to get into those conversations about some of the holistic league-wide stuff, the bigger picture issues. So she really wants to slot in right next to your Neko Gumakes, your Elizabeth Williams, Alicia Clark, some of these big names that have been around for so long. And I think that leadership, that in her being kind of pushing herself out of her comfort zone from the very beginning, just kind of exemplifies the unique talent that she is.
And with that current CBA expiring at the end of this upcoming October, there will be a lot to shape the future landscape around the WNBA. Miles, you talked about the depth of this draft class here in 2025, back half of the opening round, maybe into the second round. Of course, a name that everybody knows from college hoops, that would be Haley Van Lith. She goes 11th overall in the first round. What did you make of that selection? What perhaps was your favorite pick of the back half of the opening round, or one you would like to highlight even deeper into the second round?
Yeah, I really do like the Haley landing spot. Obviously, she gets the reunion with Angel Reese. They played together in college for a year. But yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I have two picks back-to-back because Connecticut was on the clock at 7 and 8, and they walked out with Anissa Morrow and Saniya Rivers. And after literally losing their entire starting five, the Sun not only needed a culture-led restart, but I think they also just needed bodies. And this is a great landing spot for two prospects with really high ceilings, but still room to grow in their games. Anissa, despite being 6'1", led the country in rebounds per game. Saniya is a strong playmaker. She rebounds well for a guard, has the length and athleticism. So I think it's a good spot when we talk about development and you think about who can actually make an impact. Connecticut has the room for both of them.
The Sun entered last year with the third best price to win a WNBA title, but a lot of moving parts for Connecticut in this offseason. Alyssa Thomas, now with the Phoenix Mercury, and so many other changes in Connecticut. Here are the odds, Miles, for 2025's WNBA season. The Indiana Fever reloading this offseason to bolster the roster around Caitlin Clark, but of course at the top, still the New York Liberty, the team you cover closely, at a plus 230 price, followed by the Aces and the Fever at plus 350. Miles Ehrlich, senior writer for Windsider. We appreciate the time greatly on this Tuesday morning here on the Early Line. We'll chat again soon. More coming up on SportsGrid on the other side of the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. The postseason in the association starts on this Tuesday. Play-in tournament games, but we already know four playoff series set in stone. Two in East Conference. We started in the Western Conference with our 3-6 matchup between the Lakers and the Timberwolves. A little bit of line movement there, by the way, from the series outright price from where it began earlier in the week, favoring the Lakers. A little bit of line movement, DRS, and our other Western Conference set for the opening round. That would be the 4-5 matchup. The Denver Nuggets, home floor advantage at altitude against the LA Clippers. The line movement here, though, not back in the favorites. We're working to the underdog. We are approaching a pick'em price, if you will, for that series outright number. Denver, an ever so slight favorite at minus 120. LA plus 102. The Clippers, one of, if not the hottest teams entering the postseason. Winners of 8 straight, 18 of their last 21. Donnie, good enough for me to back that Los Angeles price yesterday at plus 116 to win this series outright. It's now plus 102. What do you make of the market movement? Who wins this opening round set in the 4-5 matchup out west?
I do want to take the Clippers here. Still plus money price at plus 102, but the word I love to use here is trustability, Ben. I do trust the Denver Nuggets in elevation to put forward a good effort here, even if they did fire their head coach before the playoffs have started here. The one thing that you're just so snake-bitten by the Clippers, it's typically they don't show up to the playoffs healthy. But then if they get to the playoffs and they're healthy, quickly, you know, gets back to knees and ankles and protocols, and away go the Clippers. Because if you do line these teams up man by man and that's starting five, I like the Clippers starting five better. And that does include Nikola Jokic on one of the side, who's maybe the best player in the NBA. But I don't know if I can take the Clippers because I can't trust the Clippers yet. And this is coming from a guy that the past couple weeks, like, hey, Donnie, give me your long shot. Give me the team that can wreak some havoc there in once they get into the playoffs. It's always been the Clippers if they're healthy, and they are healthy. But there's still something for me that says, man, I don't know if I can dive in and take that price point right around a plus 100 for them to win the series. Would I be shocked if they won it? Absolutely not. But if I said, Donnie, free pick, free play in this one, Nuggets minus 120, plus 102 Clippers, it's going to be the Clippers for me. It will be. I just don't have a ton of confidence on it. That's all.
You look at the numbers, DRS. The Nuggets are the series outright favorite, but they are the ones getting the game and a half as that series spread underdog. Hefty price at minus 210. Shortest in terms of series total score, that would be the amount of games that we see both game 6 and game 7 at a plus 200 number. We expect this to get to at least 6 games. That's what the odds makers believe. And although I am backing the underdog, the Clips to win this series outright as the 5 seed without that home court advantage, DRS, I don't think it happens in 4 or 5 games. I do believe this series has the chance to go the distance. Again, the Clippers, led by Kawhi Leonard and James Harden and Ivica Zubats and Big Will Norm Powell, playing some great basketball down the stretch. DRS, they dropped 6 of their first 7 following the All-Star break. They won 18 of their final 21 to earn that 5 seed in the Western Conference. Now, it's been exactly a week for the Nuggets since the shocking dismissal of head coach Michael Malone and the GM as well. Calvin Booth, I believe his name is. And Donnie, in those 3 games for Denver, following the firing of Michael Malone, it's not like the Nuggets were sitting pretty like, eh, it don't really matter. We win these games, whatever. They needed to win those 3 to secure home floor advantage for the opening round of the NBA playoffs. They won all 3. They covered in all 3. The Nuggets have had that small interim bump, if you will, at least to end the regular season, and they still have the best basketball player on planet Earth in Nikola Jokic, and a team that, under Michael Malone just 2 years ago, had the championship pedigree winning that Larry O'Brien trophy.
And understand how things happen, like in the real world, which again includes the NBA. Like, this wasn't a decision that was made in the middle of the night by the ownership group and the general manager, regardless of what the players thought. And there is a bounce that you did get because apparently the players are happy. You would have heard right away, like, Nikola Jokic taking the money. Michael Malone got fired. You got to be kidding me. Like, I don't even understand what this organization is doing. Then you're aware, like, oh, no, this is going to have a negative effect. But the firing was, wow, I can't believe they did that. But we didn't hear that from inside the locker room for the Nuggets, or the feedback from B-writers, like, man, this team is in turmoil because the players can't believe Michael Malone, who led them to a championship where they loved, was let go on the doorstep of the NBA playoffs. And you saw them play better down the stretch. And as you pointed out, this wasn't like, we're locked into the fifth seed, let's make this move now, and final three games of the season, we'll work things out. Like, no, they were working on the fly to improve their seeding and make sure they didn't drop out of the play-in round to playoff rounds into the play-in round. Yeah. So that's something that I see as a net positive right now, which maybe could have been a net negative just a week and a half ago. So it does have added pressure for the Nuggets. They're still supposed to win. They won a championship a couple years ago. Jokic is still their best player, maybe the best in the NBA. But I do think the Clippers are legitimate in this series. Again, do I trust the Clippers? Yeah. That's the tough part here. But I don't think we're coming into the playoffs with a negative connotation on the Nuggets right now with them firing their head coach. I don't.
The last time the Clips won a playoff series back in 2021. And Donnie, just to further highlight how close the odds makers expect this series to be, when you look at the correct score odds, Denver to win in 7 on their home floor, plus 410. LA to win in 6 on their home floor, plus 410. The number's the same on either side if there was to be the upending of those expected odds. Let's flip our attention now to the Eastern Conference, our 3-6 matchup. The New York Knicks and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons in the postseason are in the playoffs for the first time since 2019. The New York Knicks stumbling down the stretch, but still the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. Donnie, when we look at this opening round playoff series, we expect it to be quick. The Knicks, a minus 430 outright favorite to win this series in 5. That's the shortest number at plus 190. For the Knicks to do it in 5 is plus 245, by far the shortest number, the only one sub 4-1. My question to you is rather simple. Is it going to be that quick and easy for the Knicks?
I don't think it should be, though, right? Like, we're pricing the Knicks as if it's an automatic victory over the Detroit Pistons. Do I love the Pistons? Not necessarily. But the Knicks have shown us, like, okay, you're playing legitimate competition and struggle with the upper echelons. They've done well against the middling teams, but I don't want to disrespect Detroit and call them a middling team here. You see that Detroit spread there, plus 2.5, minus 144? That might not be a bad way to go. You steal a game in the Garden. Here we go, 1-1 back to Detroit. You're going to get that cover here. So for me, I'm not betting the Knicks at minus 430. Give me the plus 2.5 games with the Pistons.
We'll continue to talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid, previewing the opening round playoff series in the NBA that we have set. The 3-6, 4-5 matchups in either conference. DRS now in the Eastern Conference. The New York Knicks, the 3 seed, will host the Detroit Pistons, the 6 seed, come Saturday. Again, the odds makers are expecting this to be rather comfortable and easy for the Knickerbockers. Minus 430 to win the series outright. Shortest to do it in 5 games, plus 190. The Knicks to win it in 5, plus 245, and a 2.5-game favorite in that series spread. That would mean if New York is going to capture that prize, they either have to sweep Detroit or win it in 5. Donnie, much like you, I don't think it's that easy. Now, I'm not saying the Pistons pull off the outright upset in advance of the Eastern Conference semis, but I do think Detroit can at least get this back to the Motor City for a 6th game. It's the second playoff bet that I have so far. Clippers outright on the series spread, or the series outright number against the Denver Nuggets, and the Detroit Pistons getting 2.5 in the series spread, hoping this just gets to 6. I think the Pistons can provide a little bit of a spark and be a thorn in the side of New York.
Yes, and maybe they can. And also understand this, too. Sometimes you get into the playoffs with a team that's not used to being in the playoffs, at least recently with the Detroit Pistons, that you're playing with house money at this point. You play free out here. There's no stress. You're not like, oh, my goodness, if we don't win this, I'm going to be traded out of town. My head coach is going to be fired. That's not where they're at. And I do think we're going to get some great efforts here. Now, is an interesting way to approach this series. Like, you see the plus 340 price. Let me just take a look to see what we have in the series, because what I want to do is see what that plus money number could be. So I'm trying to scroll down. All right, there we go. So plus 245, Ben, opening night here on Saturday in the Garden, the Pistons. Would you be better off looking at that game and saying, boy, if they come to play in that one and they can steal that one, that's worthwhile for the series itself. Or are you sitting back and saying, instead of betting, let's just say, Ben, the series price, I don't know if they can win game number one, but why would I bet the 2.5 if I don't think they can win game number two? They're down 0-2 going back at that point, where that price point probably going to be around that 250, 260 price. That might be an interesting way to bet this, because you're right. The Knicks should be able to handle their business. They're priced appropriately. We're just trying to thread the needle as what's the best one to do, because after an 0-2 start in the series for the Pistons, you're not feeling so good about even getting plus 2.5. Right. But if you take a look at game number one and it's like, wow, Knicks by 10 points, 15 points, I don't know if they can win this series. You know the Pistons and that zigzag theory that everybody loves in the NBA playoffs, you got to win game number two. You can't go back 0-2 into your own building, and maybe that's the time that you take that big plus money swing as opposed to the plus 2.5. Just some food for thought on how this might play out. For me, and as well as you probably thinking, Detroit's got to get one in New York between games 1 and 2 to actually be a factor in this series.
I would think so, and I think it's a really good idea if you believe that is the thought for this series. As Tom Vecchio laid out yesterday, Detroit plus 7 or even a money line price on the Pistons in game number one on Saturday night. Even if the Pistons lose, DRS, but keep it competitive with in 7, I'll feel a lot more comfortable about that getting 2.5 games and forcing at least a 6th game in the opening round of the postseason. Yesterday, the Pacers in our 4-5 matchup, having home floor advantage against Giannis and the Bucks, we're greater than a $2 odds on favorite. It's around $2, but now minus 198, slightly below. Again, Donnie, another series here where I think the underdog in the outright number presents a little bit of optimism. Milwaukee, much like LA, that being the Clippers, winners of 8 straight entering the postseason. If I'm just going to say it here, since losing Dame for the remainder of the year and just being led by Giannis once again, it's almost like the Bucks look better.
I'm telling you, there are some interesting factors here, because you always have Giannis. He's won a championship. You're going to get time off between games, which, again, helps veteran teams. I'm not saying the Pacers are a young team by any stretch, but I just look at Giannis being 100% every single game where he can play 35-plus minutes there. I do look at that price point. And, again, if you're just led by which side to take, the Pacers, that's a strong favorite at minus 198. Yeah. It is. So it sort of brings your eyes back to the Bucks and how you can make some money. So again, the spread values are interesting to me, plus 1.5 games. Do I think the Bucks can actually win the series? I do. But do I think the Bucks might make it close? Yeah, I do if they lose. So that plus 1.5 does make some sense. Yeah. But if I'm just reading the numbers, that is a Pacers number. But do you want to fall into, oh, now's the time to trust the Bucks because it's Giannis? Or do you let your eyes focus on the Pacers actually have a better starting five, and over this series, if healthy, should be able to exact some power over the Bucks, because that's why they're favored at close to a 2-to-1 price. But I do find myself leaning towards the Milwaukee Bucks. Sometimes you just can't quit them. Wait, the Bucks and Giannis, I'm getting this much plus money? Sometimes that's where your eyes just go.
It certainly is. Let's talk some play-in tourney action when Hour 3 starts next.